step out the front door like a ghost into a fog where no one notices the contrast of white on white.
You're listening to Dig Deep on KAXE KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton with Aaron Brown and Chuck Marone. Aaron is our liberal commentator. Chuck is our conservative commentator.
So we're here with our gubernatorial candidates who we're prepared to ask all these questions to that we prepared so diligently. Last week, I was in Yellowstone National Park. And before I left, my intention was to have all my questions done and in this like shared Google Doc that we all had, because that was kind of our prep thing. We had a conversation about how we were going to do it. And then we said, we're going to put this doc together. And we had a strategy. And I didn't get my part done. And I spent the whole week feeling guilty about not having my part done. And I actually had no internet access, but I had my notebook with me. So I sat down and I wrote notes in my notebook. And I, you know, thought through my questions, had like all the different nuances. And then when I found out Tuesday who had won the election, actually I had a friend text me Tuesday night, the primary results. I thought, okay, you know, I wasn't totally shocked, but I think I did expect the Governor Pawlenty to win the Republican primary. Not really a total shocker that he didn't. But I had my questions, you know, I'm like, okay, I'll tweak these questions a little bit. And then I got back into like civilization and got an email from you, Heidi. And no, we won't be having a debate tonight, will we?
No, we will not. So we were recording this when this big event was going to happen. And today is Tuesday. Is that right?
That's right.
So just what, 2 days ago?
Two days ago, we found out for sure. Yeah.
It was canceled. Yes.
Yeah, that was quite a thing. And
well, let me ask this, because I think like people listening, and this is like something like I'd want to know too.
Okay.
So before, like early on in the campaign, you know, we had kind of set this marker in the ground, and we had made these invitations, and we had tentatively had like the parties accept, correct, on behalf of the candidates.
Right.
How does this all go down and be organized? And like from your side, Heidi, like how would this happen?
Well, it was almost an impossible event to plan in that way, because we were doing it the week, exactly a week after the primaries. There were good reasons for that. We knew like the state fair is starting in a couple of days. That'll be crazy. The venue we wanted to do it in, the largest in Grand Rapids, seats 700, is attached to the high school, gets very, very busy. Like the minute school starts, they are busy all the time. So we thought, let's try to fit this in pretty early. So you're right. It was about a year ago. We started having governor candidate interviews, and each of them, I would say, hey, we're going to have you back. And you know, if you win the nomination,
when you win.
Yeah. Right. That's where you get tricky, because you want to be positive to everybody you talk to. But then I just occasionally through this whole year, I would send off an email or talk to the party or say something. You know, I remember I talked to someone in the Republican Party in December, and he's like, that's fantastic. 98% chance, you know, we can be there, because of course we don't know our candidate, but you know, and he actually, I should say, he whispered, I think Pawlenty's going to enter, because of course at that time,
right,
Pawlenty wasn't in the race even yet in December. So, and he no longer works for the campaign, by the way. So that's the problem too, which I didn't know, and maybe Aaron knows that, but about how campaigns work and the workers change all the time. So one person that gave you a yes is not there the next time you call a week later.
One of my prognosis here was a campaign communication issue. You know, you talk to somebody, especially a year out, and they're working with a certain set of personnel. And as they go through the nomination endorsement process, they change out their personnel. And I think what happened is you sent out your confirmation emails after the primary, and you were talking to...
And phone calls.
And
everybody
phone calls.
Got phone calls.
And you were now talking to their general election staff, the newly staffed up general election teams, and they were treating this massive thing that we spent a year working on as a brand new, oh, these nice folks in the North are having some kind of forum.
How cute.
How droll, you know? And then they put it on the stack with the rest of them and said, you know, we're just not going to do that for whatever reason.
Right.
And part of that is campaign strategy, how many debates they want to do.
Yeah.
Campaigns are trying to regulate the number of debates so that their candidates don't burn out in the midst of all this. And so they're saying, well, here we should go here and do this. And they had just done two debates right out the gate the week prior, including the Almanac debate, which was the one everybody saw. Mm-hmm. And then after that is when we started getting word that the campaigns weren't going to come. So
it's so sweet. You think everybody would watch Almanac?
Oh my gosh.
Well, because I'm that
we
way
all
too.
Saw Almanac. Of course, sorry. We did.
I'm sorry. I, you know, everybody.
Well, I DVR'd it, and
I want to say though that the Venn diagram overlap of Dig Deep listeners and Almanac viewers is fairly high.
That's true.
I will say that I did not see Almanac.
I didn't either. I was out of town.
Yes,
as well,
I DVR'd it if you need it.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, I did read like the follow up, like the summary stuff.
Yeah.
And boy, I'm kind of. I mean, I don't want to like dump on Almanac or anything, but I'm embarrassed sometimes at the questions that are asked and the way we treat. I mean, it's not as bad as like boxers and briefs, you know, although that was one of my questions. I'm just kidding. So, I mean.
But some of it is.
It's almost that. Yeah. And you're
super
like,
simplistic in exactly. the way they present an issue. And I think one of the questions, and I didn't see it, but Heidi told me about it, was the generalized rural-urban divide.
Is it a myth?
Is it a myth?
That was really the only...
What does that even mean? That's just campaign rhetoric, really. Right. And then it tees up two pretty meaningless sound bites in response, you know. And it doesn't really refer to any rural issues. It doesn't refer to any rural people in any real way. Yeah. It's just kind of an abstract thing.
Well, and even before I saw this, so let's talk a little bit about what we wanted to do. And I'm going to be optimistic. We'll do it at some point.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still a little shocked here. So I don't know that this is going to happen for these people at this time, but I would like to do this at some point because I feel really strongly that we were the people to organize this because of how KAXE in KBXE, we know our communities. We have partners in media like Lakeland Public Television. They had offered it and it was going to be shown at Twin Cities Public TV on their Minnesota channel. We had a bunch of stations who were going to see it. And so for us, it wasn't just people who listened to KXE. This was really this whole thing that we tend to talk about a lot here, which is rural people are defined by people other than rural people, you
right.
know? And the three of us choose to live and work in rural areas. And so we thought it would be different for that reason alone and be able to ask those questions. And for me, when I end up doing some of these, moderating some debates or doing things like that, you show up and you're on and you don't have kind of a relationship with the people you're asking questions with. So we were working really hard to have our questions flow and to also have the ability to do some follow-up in the next question and to, you know each other and know what our entire intention was for the whole night. And I think you miss that in other things.
Well, I think to get beyond platitudes too. I mean, comment on the rural-urban divide. Is it myth or not? I mean, what kind of substance are you getting out of that? But when we start to dig into issues like local government aid, which, you know, in our listening area, many, many cities are wholly dependent on local government aid. There are cities that people live in that are listening to us right now where 80% of their budget is just aid from the state. And I think from a policy standpoint, I wanted to really get at, do you think this is a problem? And if it is, what would you do? And if it's not, why not? I mean, doesn't this like keep you up at night and shock you and just really bother you? To me, there's a little part of me that says, maybe the campaigns were saying, well, this is cute. You know, look at these rural people. We are like, you know, whatever. Maybe there's another part of me that says, you know, I would prefer the Almanac question because it's easier and I can do my campaign thing with it as opposed to, you know, I don't know what this wild card thing is up there. And they're going to have TVs and they're going to have, you know, press. And I don't know if I want to be. I do think there's a little more risk, you know, for the candidates in coming to a thing like what you had set up, you know, what KXE had set up for this, than appearing on, you know, a show where they're going to give you softballs.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they listened to our episode where we previewed how we were going to do a different kind of debate. This is a few episodes ago for you listeners.
We tipped our hand.
Yeah, and we said how we were going to ask questions. You might not have said that question exactly, but you listed a few questions you would have liked to ask, and I listed a few. And now, while those might not have been our questions that we included in our actual list, you know, maybe it scared him. I like to believe that somebody listened and turned off the MP3 player and was just very upset by what they heard and hurriedly ran down the hallway and told the candidate, you know, we're not going. But I tend to lean towards more it was just a coincidence of timing and a campaign realities. And it strikes me, and I think, Chuck, you're right about one thing, is that these campaigns are now, I think, locking in for a controlled descent to the November 6th election and want to eliminate variables. And both sides do, because they're playing, I think, we've come to the times where these are base elections. Get your base out, the other side gets their base out, and the most enthusiastic side wins. In a state like Minnesota, that actually is going to hold up pretty true, because we're mostly a 50-50 state, you know, or close to it right now. And so the base election, which means having a substantial debate aimed at the sliver of voters who would actually be up for grabs in as to who they're going to vote for, isn't as important as wailing on those sound bites that are going to drive out the voters who definitely won't vote for the other side, but they might not vote, and that's what you got to get them to do.
Well, you can see this in the Republican primary too, which I followed a lot more closely than the DFL primary. There were a couple debates with Johnson and Pawlenty where I walked away just shaking my head going, what is this? Pawlenty calling him a poser, them spending half the time arguing over who supported Donald Trump first and the mostest and the bestest, you know? And it's like, it was a weird dance between, I mean, especially like the conversation about Donald Trump was, I was there like supporting him, but I don't like fully support him. And it was a really weird, we're in the age of Trump, we're in the age of Twitter, we're in the age of like the cable news cycle. And it seems like, and I've lamented this before on this program, it seems like our discourse, the closer it gets to the national level, and the governor is certainly the biggest race in Minnesota, we tend to just like dumb it down to a degree that in my nostalgia, maybe I don't remember it being this way. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe it's always been this way. But it certainly seems to me like we would have not accepted a governor candidate who called another one a poser and the other one who, you know, it seemed childish, really, at the end of the day for both candidates on the Republican side in a way that I was embarrassed to listen to.
Now, on a national level, they are saying that this Republican primary was solely about Trump, who was more mm-hmm. aligned with Trump. But I'm hearing people in the state saying it wasn't that. It also had to do with Pawlenty's record. Did you have any feeling on that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the media, and if we want to, you know, go ahead and put your spin on it, hashtag fake news or whatever you want, I think the media really wanted to make the story about Donald Trump. I mean, certainly when they had a chance to ask the candidates questions, my guess is that the internal polling of the candidates also suggested that, you know, that was going to be a thing in a primary for turning out voters. Whether that will be through the general election, I think, is up in the air. I'm sure the DFL will want to make that a big deal because it's going to help get their people out, and maybe the Republicans will as well. But you had that kind of specter around it. I think that some of the more effective things in retrospect from the Johnson campaign, and I think some of the weaker parts from the Pawlenty campaign in retrospect, they didn't deal with, you know, where's Tim Pawlenty been the last 8 years? You know, he's been a banking lobbyist, you know, in D.C. I mean, he's not been, you know, one of us. And I think the big thing that Pawlenty had going for him when he ran for governor is, you know, him out on the ice rink playing hockey and him as one of the guys. And
Sam's Club Republicans whatever. Yeah, was his big thing. He was blue collar. That was
totally blue collar.
They hit you over the head with it. Tim Pawlenty was a blue collar Republican. And that was his whole appeal when he was governor, at least how he got elected. And that was all gone. All of that was gone. You know, and you had a well-known name that I think a lot of people voted for him because they thought maybe he was best positioned to win the race for the Republicans. And so that's why he had some support. But like Chuck, I join him in being moderately interested, but not surprised that Johnson won, because every Republican that I know that I like who lives in the 8th district who talked about it said they liked Johnson and they didn't like Pawlenty. And part of that is Trump and the whole Johnson was Trump before it was cool and Pawlenty wasn't. But it's all kind of related to that whole identity of this aggrieved kind of a, you know,
insider outsider,
you know, yeah the insider outsider debate. And if you're a part of an establishment of any description, you're bad. And if you're not, then you're good. And Johnson was the guy who was on the outside. While he was the nominee 4 years ago, he was kind of an outsider then too. And so he won. And so that's not shocking. The DFL side was maybe not shocking in the end. Walls was probably the favorite when the whole thing started. But I think we saw some different things going on in that primary, the surge of Erin Murphy and how, you know, granted she lost by, I think, 9 points, which is a lot, but she came from, in the polls, they were showing her at 13%, and that just wasn't true. She finished much stronger than that. And so I think that's another sign, though, of a base that was excited for, again, the more progressive voice in that primary. Both parties, you saw a big surge of, I don't want to say, maybe the extremes would be how some would say, but the most base, you know, visceral, emotional candidates had a huge surge at the end. While Walls won, he won in part because he had tracked to the left significantly since his days in Congress. So that just shows you, though, to bring it around, that we're down to a base election, and the bigger base is going to win this election, and that's how they're approaching it.
I just want to ask you one thing, because, you know, this was a really highly contested Republican primary, and they were pretty nasty. And then the day after, I saw Johnson and Wall say they know each other, they like each other, and they're going to have this be a clean battle.
Yeah.
How long will that last, do you think?
Well, the thing that we have now is candidates can say that. I ran a campaign for a state legislator, and we never ran a negative ad in 12 years of campaigning. But negative things appeared in people's mailboxes, not from us.
Right.
And that's politics today. And so they can say that, and their campaigns won't buy negative ads, but outside groups will certainly buy millions and millions of dollars of negative ads. And so it's a nice thing for them to say, and it's friendly, and it's, you know, it makes them both look good in their own way. And maybe it's even true. Maybe they hang out. Maybe they're cool. They're like, they do like a buddy cop thing. They're driving around solving crimes. Yeah, exactly.
Great.
That'd be wonderful. But the fact of the matter is the hammer is going to come from these huge pots of outside money.
Okay. I also don't get the sense that the DFL needs to demonize Johnson in order to mobilize their base. I mean, they have the boogeyman that they can point to mobilize the base in Washington, D.C., in the White House.
Well, and Walls has worked for him. He's a congressperson,
yeah.
You know? So, I mean, he has a particular take on that, where he actually knows what that's been like, you know? So
yeah. And I just don't feel like hitting Johnson personally is really the way to go, just because he's, you know, I don't know the guy well. He's kind of a non, you know, people don't know him well, but his problems aren't like, I hate that guy, I want to punch him in the face, you know? It's not that kind of deal. I mean, if Democrats want to go after Johnson on anything, they just have to try to take some of his positions that might be out of line with where most voters are and try to hit him on that, which is, you know, what the Republicans are going to do too. But you're going to see the most egregious, ugly parts of this campaign are going to come from the outside. And, you know, we already started seeing negative ads in other races. And so that's all coming.
In our next segment of Dig Deep, we will talk through some of the questions we were going to ask the governor candidate.
They're awesome. They would have been so good.
Aaron Brown and Chuck Marone.
Came from Nashville with a suitcase in her hand. She says she'd like to meet a boy.